Iranian ambassador to China, Abdulreza Rahmani Fazli, says that Beijing and other friendly nations will be granted preferential access through the Straits of Hormuz, adding that the arrangement will be implemented in coordination with Oman. Certainly, the Trump administration and the United States, Dr. Oscar, not happy about this. Most definitely not.
No, no, definitely not happy. I mean, what that simply means is that there is selective closing of the Strait of Hormuz, open for friends and allies and closed for enemies.
For a lengthy period of time, Iran has made it very straightforward. They've repeated it, they continue to repeat it, i.e. the maritime traffic in and out of the Straits of Hormuz, the coordination of the Straits itself, will continue to be under the jurisdiction of Iran and Oman, and rightly so. From a sovereignty perspective, Dr. Oscar, that makes sense, but there continues to be pushback from the United States and the Zionist regime, obviously using the United States here, something which the United States will never want to accept, will never want to agree upon. But this sovereignty has literally been in place for hundreds and hundreds of years. Why then the continued pushback from the Trump administration?
I think to answer that question, we need to ask the question, why has Iran not done this before? Mm. Why now? And the answer is very simple. A war was fought. America and the Israelis, under the leadership of the war criminal Netanyahu, decided to illegally act of aggression against Iran and had thought that they will win the war. But in all wars, when you lose more than just losing the war, because the victor gets the spoils. And because Iran won that war, they decided they are taking control of the Strait of Hormuz, and they will regulate who comes and goes, and there will be a toll to be paid for all future ships and so forth. Whether the Gulf states like it or not, whether America likes it or not, it is only going to change through the barrel of the gun. And at the moment, America is unable to do so.
So, Dr. Oscar, with the Trump administration literally blockading a so-called blockade, that didn't work. Hegseth and company were adamant, saying that we will ensure that the Straits of Hormuz opens, that it will be open to anyone and everyone. And then the Trump administration even went as far as saying, if Iran does not agree, we ourselves will take control of the Straits of Hormuz. That has not happened. A glimmer, not even close to what you profess you would be doing. That did not even come remotely close to what the United States was hoping to achieve. So for all intentions and purposes, Dr. Oscar, the illegal attacks on Iran by the United States and the Zionist regime produced utter failure on the side of the United States and the Zionist entity. But what we do perhaps see as a pattern that will continue to unfold in West Asia, that the likelihood of more attacks coming from the side of the United States against Iran could be forthcoming again in maybe the long-term future or maybe the short-term future.
Remember, I agree with all that you said. Remember that one of the main reasons why the war had to stop was not only because of the pummeling that the global economy was experiencing through the closing of the Strait of Hormuz, oil, gas, fertilizers, and other commodities or goods. It was not only for that reason. It also had to stop because America and Israel was literally running out of missiles. They simply did not have enough weaponry to get the war objectives on their side. And that's partly why they had to pull back. Now we know that America, Trump's administration, has given instructions to the military industrial complex to work overtime and to produce as much of these missiles that they possibly can. So the assumption that they will resume the fighting is very high, and the Iranians know this. They are also preparing for this. Remember, how do you trust an adversary that every time you talk to them, they kill you? This is what America has done repeatedly. So for the Iranians with this MOU, if for them they also see it as a temporary reprieve. Let's see how far we can push the envelope. Perhaps we can get some of the millions that they owe us in terms of the sanctions that they've put against us, so that our economy can recover a little bit, so that we can rebuild a little bit. But at the same time, I'm almost certain that the missile production and the drone production in the Iranian state is going unabated, because they know that come November's midterm elections, Trump is now that the elections are out of the way, Trump is going to want to restart the war. But unfortunately, I think that calculation, according to my opinion, is misplaced, because if he does badly in that midterm elections and the Democrats take the House as well as the Senate, that will be tickets for Trump. Similarly, as I'm sure your listeners know, there is an election coming up. I think it's in October in Israel, where most certainly Netanyahu and his extreme right-wing coalition government is not going to be returning. So the situation is changing very quickly.
Dr. Oscar, where does this leave the Gulf monarchies? I know you mentioned them a couple of minutes ago. The UAE and Kuwait and others have made their stance abundantly clear. We know where their allegiances are. What has now happened in the last couple of months to Qatar and Saudi? Have they backpedaled? Are they fence-sitters at this point? Are they going to wait it out? Are they in a position where they are unequivocally stating, for now, we are not prepared to take action against Iran? We need a civil, cordial relationship. Or is it a case of Iran now knows what it had known a long time ago, i.e. the status quo of who their friends and who their foes are in West Asia?
Yeah, look, whichever they want and pretend to do and not do, the truth is that they are intelligent enough to know that the status quo prior to 3 months, 4 months ago, the geopolitical and geostrategic nature of the Persian Gulf has changed forever. If they want to continue to rely on the United States of America for their security, only a fool will do so, in light of the fact that when it came to matter, the United States was not there to protect them. In fact, they were there to protect only one of the allies in the region, and that was that was Israel. So, you know, with the UAE, Qatar, Saudi, we know, for example, the Saudi prince has already allowed his government to meet with the Iranians, a historic first meeting for a long time. And it's all saying that if we want to pretend to continue the way we have been doing it, with the Iran that has now emerged so strongly, then we are blowing up steam. What we should rather do is to begin to interact and begin to have cordial relations with Iran as well. I think the Abraham Accords is dead in the water. There is not going to be a normalization of relations with Israel, no matter how Trump insists. I think that this will also have a positive impact on bringing the genocide to an end. I think more and more countries are going to join the ICJ case, and Israel will increasingly be isolated because their only protector at the moment is Donald J. Trump. And once he is removed, or he is finding himself in peril, then things are going to shift even more in favor of the Iranians. So, you know, I think the Gulf states needs to think very, very strategically and very carefully about how they take their own security, but also the security of their people into consideration in the coming months.
Dr. Oscar, there has been significant evidence and proof for a number of years in respect of a very close geopolitical and even economic relations that exist between Russia, China, and the Islamic Republic of Iran. With this latest public announcement by the Iranian ambassador to China saying Beijing and other friendly nations will most certainly be granted preferential access through the Straits of Hormuz, it speaks to a long-standing relationship. And I know you've spoken about this on a number of occasions. This certainly does speak of a very long-term relationship that has existed between Iran and China, not only since the time of June 2025, when the Zionist entity in coordination and support that they got from the United States, they attacked Iran, and they did the same again this year in Feb. But it speaks to a long-standing relationship that has existed between the People's Republic of China and the Islamic Republic of Iran.
No, absolutely. I mean, you must remember, Sinead, that, you know, when China conceived of the notion of BRICS, it thought very carefully about who the strategic partners should be. And it was China who, for example, was quite insistent. If we're looking at a credible African partner, it must be South Africa. And it's not just because it was the strongest economy on the continent. No, it is about our geostrategic location. In terms of where the Atlantic and the Indian Oceans meet, it's about the services and goods that can be ferried through and genuinely be a gateway into Africa. All those reasons. For the same reason, China has identified Iran as very, very critically important in maintaining that access, because at the moment, the reason why Rubio and Trump are so adamant that they are not going to allow for Iran to take control of the Strait of Hormuz and to actually charge a toll and therefore become a maritime choke point is because at the moment they control the Suez Canal. They control the Panama Canal, but more importantly, the Suez Canal. So goods and services that comes from the Far East that's supposed to find its way to Europe and, of course, to North America, that's the route that they take. We see, for example, prior to the opening of the Suez Canal in the way that it is now today, they had to come past the Cape of Good Hope, past South Africa. That was the old route. Now, during the war, many companies, many ships, etc., also then decided to take the old route, which benefited South Africa. But the truth is that the relationship, the geostrategic relationship between China, Iran, and Russia, it is absolutely critical for the Belt and Road, because it is beginning to build an alternative route, not only to service the countries going north of Africa into Kazakhstan, Pakistan, etc., into the Gulf, and then, of course, through to Russia, which then takes that control that Western allies have through Egypt. It takes it away, and it makes the world a bit more equal in terms of the movement of people and goods and services. This is what is at play here. It's about the tension that's there, the hegemonic tension that's there between the United States still wanting to be the big honcho and the hegemon globally, and China rising.
Indeed, a viable alternative for the global south and the world at large. Dr. Oscar van Heerden, international relations expert and analyst, as always. Doc, thanks so much for your time and PM Drive.